You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. It's 2022, episode 121. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today for this Christmas blues come down, it's a man who can feel your presence better than Darth Vader. It's Mark Mulcaster. Mark, how are you doing?
I've had a nice, good chunk of festive holiday time off, which has been wonderful. And in fact, I've still got a few more days left, so I can't complain. How about you? How was your Christmas and all that?
Gone in a heartbeat. Ridiculous. Worked right up to the 22nd and then spent the last sort of 9 days with family.
Yeah.
I had loads of Star Wars stuff for Christmas.
Did you? Ooh.
Yes, I did.
Awesome.
You might be able to hear it. That is the bag being dragged across the floor. There are, and I will just briefly lay it out, there's the child egg cup and toast cutter.
Nice.
There is the child heat changing mug, Mando socks. I've got three pairs of pyjamas.
Wow.
From Ruth. Three pairs of Star Wars pyjamas. I've got two T-shirts. Oh, Star Wars slippers. I'm moving stuff and seeing other things now that I forgot about. So much stuff. And then just before I went away, Dave Tree at All the Cool Stuff sent me a couple of figures. So I've got the Cosca Reeves Black Series figure.
Nice.
I've got some of the Clone Wars figures. Yes, I had a very good Christmas. How about you?
I also got some Grogu stuff, but I didn't get slippers or pyjamas. One of the random things that my mum brought me was this little tub of Grogu goo. It's peach bath jelly.
Oh, yes. In a little, like a yogurt pot. Yes, I got one as well. Yeah, peach. That's right.
Yeah, so I got that and I've actually tried it and I'm just like, this is weird. You know, rubbing Grogu snots all over your body is just weird. I mean,
you mean Bogru?
Yeah, exactly. Bogru. Exactly. And I have 5 Star Wars calendars. And actually, just to complete the theme of 2021, my lovely Karen, she brought me a pair of Stormtrooper boots. So that basically finishes off my Stormtrooper costume. So now I can finally get my pictures taken for the UK Garrison and hopefully, all being well, kind of get it submitted and cleared and approved and out trooping with them in the coming month. But I've had loads of little bits and bobs and stuff like that. Actually, one of these bizarre things that has happened is that I got a present from Karen, which I was meant to get last year for Christmas, but literally only arrived about a week or so ago from Zavi. And it's one of those tiki cups. It's a Boba Fett tiki cup.
Oh, brilliant.
Which is quite cool. So good friends of mine, Susie and Greg, brought me like a smaller one. And this is like a larger one. So I've now got a mini Boba and a big Boba tiki cup. So, or tiki mug, I suppose you'd call it. So, and a few Funkos as well. So yes, thoroughly spoilt.
Hello, I'm Dennis Lawson, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
2021 and 2022. We put a piece on the site.
Yeah.
I threw it out to the team. You were one of the people that responded and put a little bit of thought into it. And we had about 80 people across the internet, friends, other podcasts, other sites, sent their responses in. Thank you, everyone, for taking part in that. I was really thrilled with that, even though I was still adding stuff to it at 11 o'clock on New Year's Eve. If you look back at 2021, what would you say are your highlights? And what's the one thing, just one thing, if you had to pick top of the tree, that you're looking forward to the most in 2022?
Well, I would probably say the Bad Batch. That's been my highlight. It's a close match between Bad Batch and Visions, but I think because it's in-universe canon continuity, I think we're going to stick with the Bad Batch. That's definitely the thing that I've kind of enjoyed the most from this year. And looking forward to 2022, I'm guessing it's going to be the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, or if it comes first, Andor.
Okay, so Andor's your pick.
Yeah.
On the piece that we put on, there was a lot of people looking for Kenobi.
Yeah.
But more people said Andor than I thought they would, because Andor feels like the dark horse, doesn't it, at the moment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I'd say so as well, yeah.
I think for me, for 2021, boringly, I'd probably have to agree. I really enjoyed War of the Bounty Hunters. High Republic has had a fantastic start, but I think there's more to come and better to come, if that makes sense. So I think they've had a solid start, but it's just the beginning sort of thing, as Count Dooku once said. So that feels like it's launched well, but that's not peak High Republic. Peak High Republic's ahead of us. Bad Batch, I hoped for good, it delivered excellent. So I would say Bad Batch exceeded my pretty already high expectations. I think it's the best Star Wars voice work. That's not to knock any of the other previous shows. I think they've all been excellent, but I think Bad Batch has been particularly strong, and that makes a difference.
And the irony is that some of that, wasn't that recorded in people's closets and bedrooms and stuff like that, because they were still recording voice work when they were in lockdown?
Absolutely, yeah. It's just, I think Omega as a character just feels just very in the moment, very real.
Yep.
And natural. I think that's the trick. Rebels did it really well. Season 7 Clone Wars did it ever so well. And I think that kind of informed Bad Batch to a degree. Those two projects, Season 7 Clone Wars and Bad Batch, obviously connect completely, so that feels like a unit of work. There's just been some tweaks that have just made it feel more organic, if that's the right word to use, and visually it was stunning. So Bad Batch, I would agree with you, Bad Batch for 21 would be the big pick. For 22, for me, it's a close one between the excitement of Celebration, if it happens, and fingers crossed it does, given everything that's going on again with the world. Can't really change what I've said for a long time. Andor has been the one that I've thought, just that run up to Scarif and Yavin just feels so exciting. And Diego Luna was my favourite thing about Rogue One. I thought he was brilliant. Everything about that era feels like it should be tremendous. And it is always a visual thing on the page. Rebel with a small r to Rebel with a capital R, to the point where they actually plant the flag in the sand and go, right, this is us, and we're making a stand against you, which feels like the Scarif moment of when they all just leave in the ship and call themselves Rogue One and off they go. I'm really excited to see how that plays out. So yeah, I think we're pretty much on the same page there.
I think actually sometimes when we look back at a year, our eyes are always drawn to stuff like the big announcements and the big series releases, but there's so much stuff which comes out, which is testament to the fact that you're always flat out and busy writing articles. I think we sometimes forget that actually there's so much stuff coming out, which, you know, it's always good to kind of take a step back and have a pause for thought, and I guess be just grateful for what we are getting.
I'm Brian Herring, BB8 Puppeteer, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks. That'll learn you.
So it's 2022, so for now we're going to head back to 2021, November, in Telford, Wales Comic Con, where we have the chance to speak to a whole bunch of Star Wars guests, including Moon Mother herself, Mon Mothma, and here are the fruits of our endeavours at Wales Comic Con in Telford. We're here at Wales Comic Con, I'm still next to Caroline Blakiston. Thank you very much. And how are you? How's life?
I'm terrific, and I'm very lucky to be here. It's the first time I've been to one of these shows for probably a couple of years, because we were all stuck, not able to move at all. So I'm very happy. I like it. I love being here. I love it.
Yeah. Really, so how are you finding it?
No, I absolutely love it. We had a terrible journey up from the south. I live in the south coast, and it was a terrible 9-hour drive up in the rush hour, and that was a nightmare. But you know, you come here, there's something about these events which you can't, it's not like anything else in my life that ever has been. So it's a unique thing, and I love it. Thank you.
Have you missed it? Because we've all been locked down for a couple of years.
We're all doing what we're doing. Everybody's trying to survive, aren't they, as best they can, without doing too much damage.
And do you still enjoy talking about the character? Because she's, as a character, she's coming back into focus now with the new shows.
I think it's absolutely super that she's still going. And I met the girl who plays her in quite by chance. And I said, are you Mon Mothma? And she said, yes. And I said, so am I. So we had a wonderful hug, and we probably cried a little bit, but not too much. And she's very nice, very good.
And do you find it strange? I mean, when you made the film back in, 82, nearly 40 years ago, you couldn't have envisaged still talking to folks like me or those times.
Well, in those days, I didn't do any of these conventions at all. I didn't start doing that for at least 5 years after I made the film or more. So it's more recent to me, so I like it. I like meeting the people. I like the people who like the films. You know, it's interesting for me.
And you still got an affection, clearly, for the character all these years later?
Of course I have. She's a good person, strong person. Moon Mother. Exactly. Moon Mother.
Ever since, I just mentioned it to you, I interviewed you for the official magazine about 10 years ago, and you wrote this beautiful handwritten reply to all the questions, and in there you wrote Moon Mother, and it's stuck with me ever since.
Well, that seems to me it was a chance, an opportunity, because I love the moon. I look at the moon, a full moon. It was a full moon yesterday, I think, and it was dark. When I'm there, I'm at the sea, and it does this wonderful golden shining down on the water, and there's nothing compared to it.
Well, nothing compares to you either, so thank you for giving us some of your time.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
So Wednesday the 29th of December 2021 saw the debut episode of The Book of Boba Fett, Season 1, Chapter 1, Stranger in a Strange Land. Great maiden song, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the episode. Loads to think about, loads to talk about. But first things first, Mr. Mulcaster, what were your initial gut feelings about Stranger in a Strange Land, the episode, not the song, when you saw it last week?
I thought it was a solid first episode. The thing is with The Book of Boba Fett, I don't really know what to expect. You know, I think everybody's comparing it to The Mandalorian. And with regards to The Mandalorian, we had nothing to go on, really. And I think part of the problem with the first chapter of The Book of Boba Fett is that actually I think maybe a lot of people are comparing it to that first chapter of The Mandalorian. Maybe we're expecting bigger reveals, like, you know, a Grogu-sized reveal or something like that. But I thought it served its purpose really well. It really kind of started to catch us up and answer those questions. I think if we didn't have so much flashbacks and it kind of just went into like the present day story and we were just left with all those questions about how we got out of the Sarlacc, I mean, I think we probably would be feeling a little bit less disservice. But I thought, to be fair, it was a solid start to the series.
It would have been very easy if they wanted to open up The Book of Boba Fett like a Bond film, where it's the end of the previous adventure. They could have done that with this if they wanted to. We always knew there was going to be flashbacks, and we had flashbacks, some very interesting ones. It was more about setting the mood than it was about anything else. Yes, we finally get the visual. We now know exactly how and what happened when he climbed out of the Sarlacc pit. Don't quite know how much longer it was after the sail barge exploded. Is it hours? Is it days? We don't know. Doesn't really matter.
But that is one of those questions, isn't it? Because that whole flashback, I think for some people, they were expecting, I don't know, almost like the first part of the episode or first half of the episode to just be him in a Sarlacc pit. You could almost imagine on some level that people were almost expecting the Sarlacc pit to just be like a giant cave and that he wanders around and he speaks to other people and then he works out how to get out or something like that. But didn't let it hang on for too long. But I was looking at like the katana and there's no smoke. It didn't seem like it was in, you know, it was still a smouldering wreck. So it must be, I'd say, a good couple of days afterwards. But the only thing that they didn't really kind of answer was actually the fate of the Sarlacc. Because to me, anyway, the Sarlacc kind of looks dead when he climbs out of the sand. It's kind of alive when he's in there. But it doesn't necessarily suggest that he killed the Sarlacc to get out. It's a bit of a grey area. You know, as people who have had these kind of conversations and kind of think that the Sarlacc died in the blast from the katana, but basically it was kind of caught up and enveloped in the blast, so that's how Fett got out. Doesn't really matter because that one shot of that hand coming up through the sand was just a real impactful moment, which I think will probably be one of those moments that we're going to kind of come back to time and time again. It's going to say this is kind of like one of those images that is now going to define Boba Fett as a character.
Fett always felt, and I think that's another thing to remember, we learnt a lot about Fett from Attack of the Clones, but it was Fett to a point.
Yeah.
You know, it's more about Jango, but, you know, you're learning the origins of Fett. And we've not really returned to him a huge amount, certainly not in the canon era.
No.
And now we're coming to him as a character that perhaps isn't quite how... And I think this is Lucasfilm will look at this as their wriggle room, because fans will have made logical assumptions, but also a lot of what you know about Fett is from the Legends
era.
It's
from EU.
So they can quite rightly go, well, forget that, cherry pick what they want. And they will if they're smart, because there's some great stuff in there. But now they're starting with a fresh perspective. Tem's back in the costume, not just voicing it, you know. And so it's not the same, but it's a bit like people saying that you shouldn't see Hayden Anakin at the end of Return of the Jedi, when Lucas clearly wants to link the two trilogies visually as well as logically. And this is kind of the same. So, well, Boba is a clone of Jango, so of course Boba's going to look like Jango, and now the guy that played Jango is the right age to play Boba, so why wouldn't you do that? And again, we'll get to it in a minute, you know, you see his face, the helmet's off a lot. Visually, it's just interesting because you don't see Pedro Pascal with his helmet off that much. That's not really the point, because they're different characters and it's a different way of presenting it. I think it was a solid start. What was your expectation for what he would see inside the Sarlacc? How were you visualising that?
The one thing that I really liked about that, I think I was expecting it to be somehow slightly bigger in my own kind of mind. And again, it might be from what I've seen in EU, and it's really hard to kind of separate yourself, you know, what you've read and what you quote unquote know about Boba Fett and now what we're learning about Boba Fett. But one thing that I really liked in that flashback was actually how claustrophobic it felt, and it felt like he was really being swallowed. The one thing that confused the hell out of me was the stormtrooper in there, because we didn't see any stormtroopers in that Jabba the Hutt scene, and the only other body that we see in the Sarlacc pit is a stormtrooper. And it's like, so where's all the guys who fell in there, all the Nyctos and stuff like that? Where have they gone? Have they died already and been swallowed up and digested? And maybe his armor is the one thing that's keeping him from being digested so quickly. The reason why you have a stormtrooper there and him nicking his air pipe, I guess, is suggest that he can't breathe very easily, and that's for, I guess, a catalyst for him to get out of the pit. Visually, I thought it was quite cool. I kind of quite liked the fact that they didn't hang around too much. It's like, we kind of know where he is, we're just going to get him out and move on. Because I think if you dwell on the fact, and if you show him falling in, bearing in mind that he fell in, you know, in a punk move, really, it kind of undermines, I guess, the character that we're going to see going forward. So the fact they just kind of go, right, he's in there, got to get him out, let's do it. And I think getting him out the way he did, using a flamethrower and burning a tunnel, is a really nice, clean and concise way to do it.
It was definitely a bad day at the office.
yeah, definitely.
You know, that, and you've got to consider what we saw 40 years ago, nearly, in Return of the Jedi. And this, in Book of Boba Fett, is the same day, near as damn it. It kind of feels like it's all just happened, and he's managed to come to. His armour looks like it's burning a little bit. The acid, there's clearly acid in there. And you'd imagine it's probably different chambers, stomachs. They could be all in there.
Yeah, it could be like a cow or something with five stomachs.
Fantatrax. Tamira Morrison in real life just turned 61.
Yeah, 61.
Fett's not 61, but you've got to assume that being in the Sarlacc has aged him. Nobody normally even gets out of that. So that's probably part of his decision to, one, he's got the relationship with Fennec, who's clearly got his back. At the moment, anyway. Never say never that she could turn on him, but at the moment she's got his back. Not a Wookiee life debt, but some sort of obligation there because he rescued her. Like I say, he's getting older, so to keep doing what he was doing before as a bounty hunter may be beyond him now, physically, at his age.
Yeah.
But now he's moving into this new, well, okay, I'm now Lord Fett. I'm taking over Jabba's operation. I mean, he's obviously got insane connections because he's Boba Fett. Not many people don't know who he is. There's probably quite a few surprised he's still alive. But nevertheless, he comes in with his own reputation, okay, and takes Bib out of it at the end of season two. And now you kind of find him again at the start of Book of Boba Fett. Mm. I think he's just physically not as able as he was.
Yeah, no, I think so. Yeah, speaking of Fennec Shand, so what did you make of the relationship? Because obviously when he's in the bat tank, she calls him boss, but she sounds like she's got a much better handle on the goings on in the underworld compared to Fett, because she seems to be kind of doing a lot of explaining, and obviously which is mainly more for our benefit, but also explaining how this whole tribute works. And he seems a little bit, I wouldn't say naive, but a little bit kind of like green to the whole kind of thing.
If Alpha and Omega are the same age,
yeah,
then that makes Fennec older than Boba. It doesn't matter what age the actors are in relation to how old the characters are. It's Star Wars. They, you know, she could be 200 for all it matters. It doesn't really matter in that sense. But it feels like she's more hooked into the underworld as a bounty hunter and assassin than Fett, who always felt like he would work for anyone for the right price. He was more of a mercenary almost than a bounty hunter. Mm. Bounty hunter was part of what he did, but not all that he did. And he's very much a lone wolf. Obviously did a lot of work for Jabba, but not exclusively. You kind of imagine in these scenarios, most characters work for a gangster or a gang lord. Miss Fett was sort of open to working for anyone for the right price.
Because he kind of even comments that when the Trandoshan walks in, he had worked for him before. Yeah. And that, yeah, and said, oh, that's weird. And then Fennec kind of says, well, I think it's probably more weird for him. And actually, that's one thing that I've quite liked about Fennec's character in general, is that she's had the better one-liners so far in this first episode. And she's got quite a nice, dry kind of sense of wit, which I quite like.
There's a good little interaction between the two in that sense, isn't there?
Yeah. But also, you just see it when she turns to him, asks if she can kill the Majordomo from Mos Espa.
Yeah.
And he kind of says, no, don't. You kind of get that she just has this look. And I'm not sure if it's a look of frustration because she can't do what she's really good at, which is kill people, or whether or not it's a look of disappointment that actually Fett isn't as strong as she wants him to be or needs him to be, and to make those kind of those calls straight away.
Yeah, she's hung her hat on him to a degree, hasn't she? Betting on Fett being the guy that takes the next step. I mean, I think this is going to come out in the show, and there's definitely a lot more flashbacks to come. I mean, who expected to see Kamino, for goodness sake? They reshot that one scene of young Jango looking in the helmet.
Daniel Logan actually said, like, the rest of it was as it was taken from Attack of Clones, but the one over the shoulder shot was a new shot. But I just almost assumed that it was just like some outtake that they just didn't use in the original shooting of Attack of Clones.
Yeah, I think most people would have assumed that. But, you know, if they're going to go to moments like that, when he's in the back to, you can see he's not struggling, but he's obviously, you can see his brain ticking over. He's thinking things through and working things out. You're going to see more flashbacks. You're going to realise why Fennec's taken a chance on him. Because also, there's clearly, I would say, I'm saying clearly, it might not be, but it seems logical that there's a reason why Fett was there to rescue Fennec in season one. There's the relationship there that gets expanded upon in season two. We've still got Bad Batch season two to come later on this year. Fennec, we know, is in that era as well. Maybe we'll start to see a teenage Fett come into the storyline there. He's the junior character in terms of age. She's more senior than him. We don't really know the depth of their relationship. That's a key thing. I think that's one of the most important things of this show going forward, is what is the nature of their relationship and why do they work together well? Because generally, we see from the Bounty Hunters comic, and we've just read it, War with the Bounty Hunters, they'll turn on each other in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But like you say, that look of almost disappointment in that, well, you may want to rule by respect, but I find fear is a really great motivator, that whole little speech as they're walking through Mos Espa, which, by the way, looks completely different to the way it did in Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. Vegas doubles in size every 10 years, so why can't Mos Espa?
But it seems like it not just got a little bit bigger, but like hugely. And I mean, maybe that's just, we didn't ever see in The Phantom Menace or Attack of the Clones, we didn't really see any big wide GV of Mos Espa, to that extreme. You know, your eyes are drawn to that kind of spire in the middle, and basically the fact that Mos Espa is like a valley, but you wonder if actually where Anakin is actually on the hilltops or on the clifftops on the outskirts. Maybe that's why Qui-Gon had landed there, because they wouldn't necessarily need to go into the city, but could probably get a lot of the stuff on the outskirts, for instance. So it just seems weird choice to use Mos Espa when you could have used like another town, or just made up a town that we've not heard of before.
It always felt like Anchorhead was more substantial, but that place that we saw, which we now know is Mos Espa, looks enormous.
Yeah, really big. Bigger than like Ord Mantell or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just thinking, wasn't Bestie...
Or Jeddah.
Jeddah, it's that kind of size, isn't it? It looked like that kind of size. I've just gone onto Wikipedia, and it looks like Anchorhead, based on the major kind of like cities and stuff, is the biggest city. Bestine is below that. But it's only stating the population is like 200,000. That city looked like it was much bigger. Just checking this now, just seeing this. Mos Espa, in brackets on Wikipedia, says de facto capital. So I never assumed that Mos Espa was as big as it is.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Given he's got the palace, people are now coming to him, so word's got out. The lady in the, whose name I don't know yet, because it's all still new to me, but Jennifer Beals character.
Well, Fala
Fwip. That's right. She's on side at the moment, it would appear, but who knows? The mayor has got that whole sequence of, you're supposed to be giving tribute to us. So there's obviously going to be stuff that plays out there. And we see the mayor, don't we, in one of the teasers, the Ithorian guy.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting to see how that plays
out. So, question for you. So, that Twilight Majordomo says, when he's told that he can go with his life to be grateful, I think he says, expect another delegation. Are we to assume the people who assail Fett and Fennec in Mos Espa are actually that second delegation, the guys with the shields and stuff? Or do we think this is some other kind of storyline just kicking off as well?
My head tells me that that is quite possibly the mayor's welcoming committee.
Yeah.
Because, that's now Fett walking into his town, as opposed to them sending a delegation out to the palace. But who knows? Because obviously we see the flashback sequence at the A homestead, not the classic Lars homestead, but it's A homestead. And there's, there's raiders, Swoop raiders and stuff, which, we've seen Swoopers since Phantom Menace time, so we know they're knocking around. So it feels like Jabba would have kept a fairly tight rein on a lot of that sort of stuff. now he's not around anymore. He's not there to marshal it. And of course, we're talking about Jabba as if he's only just gone. We're half a decade past Jabba. Yeah. You'd imagine Bib Fortuna. I mean, Twi'leks aren't stupid. Bib has picked up the reins of a very, initially, you'd think, easy job in the short term anyway. A load of the Hutts got wiped out in War with the Bounty Hunters. Exactly. So Jabba's probably got an easy run, which is a good little bit of linkage between the two storylines there. I think Jabba being around for centuries, I think, and they at that point would have had such clout that Bib didn't and wouldn't. And the galaxy's changed within, you know, a few days of Jabba being throttled by Leia. Darth Vader's gone. The Emperor's disappears for 30 years or whatever till somehow he returns. And you've got a situation where the galaxy really has completely tilted on its axis. It's that Fennec-Bobba relationship. It's too early to say, but it just feels like there's going to be a... He's going to be in a vulnerable position because it feels like he really needs her. In that street fight, he's on the floor. Yeah, he rockets the guy and tells her to bring them back alive, and she brings back one alive, you know. But he couldn't have done that in that moment. He needed her.
Hey, man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
General thoughts, then, about the aliens, because we saw what was quite nice about this episode. We saw a lot of kind of OT-era aliens and characters who kind of make some cameos. We assume it's Max Rebo, and we assume it may be Figuring Dan, who's kind of shredding the hell out of that cantina theme in that nightclub. It was pretty cool to see all those characters come back.
Fans always wanted Sy Snootles and the band to survive, but we saw Sy as a character in the Clone Wars and realised what a snake she was. So I wouldn't be too sad if she didn't get out. If Droopy didn't get out, I'd be gutted.
Yeah.
Max was the one you kind of thought, well, he's going to fling himself out off the barge and get away in time. It's great to see those OT aliens. You see a Trandoshan, you see an Ithorian in the trailer. We see a Rodian, the brown Rodian, as in Rogue One, yeah. Captured with Fett. There's an Ortolan. If that is Max and that is Figuring, and there's no reason to think it wouldn't be Figuring because we only ever really saw him in the cantina scene. We've not seen him in any peril. That'd be a nice little nod. Like seeing, you know, the monkey lizard in Chapter 1 of Mando kind of, that's cool. Don't want to go too far down that road, but by the same token, it is a galaxy where these characters interact a lot. We see it in the comics all the time. So why not see it on screen? So I'm hoping that, you know, we do see more of, or do see Zuckuss and Fallon and Bosk and IG-88 and characters like that. That would be very welcome. It was just enough. What did you think?
Yeah, if your gig kind of goes up in smoke, what do? You basically go and find a new band and then you start gigging somewhere else. So if we're Figuring Dan, the modal nodes break up, the rest go their separate ways. Maybe he's the one who's kind of spent all his money gambling and stuff like that, so he can't get off Tatooine, and so he goes over to Mos Espa. There's a bit of a music scene, and that's, like I said, where Max Rebo kind of ends up as well. You know, so it's quite foreseeable, and it's like also then was it the RX-5 droid, basically Rex from Star Tours and Galaxy's Edge, at least that type of droid. And you kind of think, well, actually, droids are mass-produced, so you could quite imagine that a droid like that would be playing as a dealer, wasn't he? I think, or something, or a server droid in the nightclub. That all makes sense. And I quite like how the two Gamorreans are introduced. You know, they didn't surrender from Bib Fortuna and what have you, but having all those characters there was great. There's just something not quite right about how the Gammos are looking. And I couldn't quite work out if it was actually two chunky dudes basically just wearing a mask, or whether or not it was just two guys with like a slightly more subtle kind of fat suit on. But either way, they just don't match up to what we saw in Return of the Jedi. I can understand in that first chapter of season 2 of The Mandalorian, where we see the Gammos wrestling, why those guys would probably be a little bit more svelte and a little bit more kind of like muscular because of what they're doing. You know, but if these Gamorreans have come from Jabba and have been there for like the last 5 years, unless of course Bib has put them on a diet, I don't know, it just didn't quite work. And I don't know if it's because we're so used to seeing them in Return of the Jedi and how they looked as opposed to what we see now, and actually its production processes have improved, so actually what we're seeing is what we probably would have seen in Return of Jedi if the processes were much better back then. And that's for a lot of the aliens. It's not necessarily that they don't look right. It might be that they look too good now. The lighting and stuff makes them look slightly less realistic from what we've seen in the past.
I've seen a few people online, and I don't know if there's anything out there that confirms this, but say that they're obviously the Gamorreans, but they're like a different breed of Gamorreans.
Oh, so right.
They're not
okay.
Quite like the other ones. You do feel that being in Jabba's palace, if you saw a Gamorrean in there, it would look very much like the ones we saw in Jabba's palace, because we saw half a dozen in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And they were all big, stocky, portly, well-fed Gamorreans. And if that's a reason for them being slightly trimmer, then hopefully that gets explained. It's like looking at Admiral Ackbar in Jedi and Admiral Ackbar in Force Awakens. Mm. And obviously, the techniques to make these creatures has improved, but there's never an excuse or a reason to completely change the look of them just because you can do something now that you couldn't do then.
Yeah.
I don't think it is Max Rebo. You only see Max from certain angles in Return of the Jedi. I'm sure if you saw the actual puppet of Max Rebo, a bit like when you look at Yoda, Yoda looks very different from different angles.
Oh, it's for lighting, isn't it? And I think that's the thing. I wouldn't be surprised if basically what we saw in Return of the Jedi was as much of the best bits of Max Rebo or the Gamo Guards. And basically, if they can move into the light a little bit more or if the shot plays a little bit longer, you kind of lose that realism. And with Yoda, the same kind of thing. You know, whenever you see Yoda in an exhibition, you just kind of look at him and go, he just looks odd. And you kind of go, well, that's the magic of how they lit it. And how they shot it. And we spoke to Tim Rose at the Star Wars Smugglers Day in Croydon, and he said about how, like, nowadays they just don't know how to film and shoot these kind of creatures and these puppets like they did back in the early 80s. And maybe that's part of the issue.
I know for the sequel trilogy, for example, a lot of the characters that they knew you would only see for 2 or 3 seconds, those masks, those creature masks, were fixed in a grin or fixed in a grimace or whatever, because that's all they needed. So they made just what they needed. You look at what you saw in the holiday special compared to the cantina in Star Wars.
Yeah.
They're basically the same masks. And in the cantina in holiday special, they look like they're off the shelf Don Post masks, and they're not. You saying about the lighting is very, very on point.
Mm.
And I think with this, you know, you look at the Max Rebo in this, if he's a teddy bear, he's not had enough stuffing. You know, he doesn't look substantial enough. But then I'm sure if you looked at the real, I'm waggling my air quotes, Max Rebo from Return of the Jedi, and looked at him from other angles, when the snoot's moving, the snout's moving rather, and that you'd go, oh, wow, that don't look the same. Makes you want to go back and look at the Making of Jedi and just see how they did look, because it's probably more faithful than we're giving it credit for.
Exactly. I think you're probably right. For one aesthetic, I'm on the fence with is the Tusken Raiders that we see in the flashbacks. Okay, I can kind of understand that the Tuskens are basically nomadic, so the clans of that probably will have their own identities. It kind of almost felt like all those Tuskens kind of came out of like the Solo era of production. I don't know, they all felt like they couldn't have any of the Tuskens from that clan wearing the typical dust sheet garb that we see all the Tuskens up to this point in. And I quite liked it, but again, it was kind of like, I wonder if it was maybe a little bit too much, and they just pushed it a little bit too far, and maybe you probably could have had the chieftain and maybe the heads of the clan almost looked a bit like Enfys Nest for kind of like necklaces and that. But then like maybe for more kind of lower caste Tuskens that would be a little bit more traditional Tuskens that we saw. Is this making changes and making something new because we can, or is there going to be a specific reason? Because obviously we do see Fett in black from that one shot we see at the end of the first chapter of season 2 of The Mandalorian, and of course now his armor is all black. And so, you know, obviously that may be some kind of story through point that will link whatever happens with him and those Tusken clans back to obviously when he gets his armor and his identity going forward.
Well, one thing I think that Star Wars at the moment is missing, and I get why they're not leaping to do it because they're pushing on with new productions and stuff, is that before, for example, Attack of the Clones, 20 years old this year, can't believe that.
I know, crazy.
Attack of the Clones, you see those Tuskens that kidnap Shmi, and they do seem slightly different to the ones you saw in A New Hope. A bit more detail, a bit more ornate.
You've the female Tuskets, which have kind of like that plated armour stuff on it.
Yeah, you see the Massifs, you see the children, obviously, because that's the whole point of the storyline for Anakin, is killing the women and the children. So you've seen more detail there. But what I'm saying is that when he had a visual dictionary or an insider's guide or whatever, which we don't seem to be getting for Mando, and I don't anticipate because of that we'll see it for Fett anytime soon, is that that's where they'll go, well, the clan that you saw in Stranger in a Strange Land was the blah blah clan. And whereas in A New Hope, you saw the Hutt Hutt clan, and in Revenge of the Sith, you see the Black clan. Well, you know what I mean? You know, there's different little tribes, nomadic tribes of Tusken Raiders around, and some mix and some don't, but they're not stating that. So at the moment, you just look at that and go, well, the clan chief, if you want to call him that, like you say, he's got pristine, ornate metalware around his neck, looks the mutts nuts, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And, you know, the woman with him as well, don't know the relationship, that she, again, looks fantastic. They all look great. It's a great design from the off, isn't it? But you need a bit of explanation beyond just going, oh, well, that looks cool. Because as it stands right now, you go, well, why mess with the classic? Whereas if we had this ancillary material, or back in the day, you'd have stuff on StarWars.com that would explain these things. You don't now. things aren't then explained, so I think they miss out a little bit there.
Yeah, and I guess also, you know, you're tying yourself down, you're locking yourself in, and I think one of the things that they had their fingers burnt a little bit by having a one inclusive and continuous continuity and universe is the fact, obviously, if you do then explain something in something like a visual dictionary, which is quote-unquote canon, then when you want to change it for a better story point later on, you've then got to retcon it, or, you know, some smart-ass podcaster will spend 5 minutes kind of moaning about it. So not naming names, Mark or Mark, but you know, that's just how it is. I think all in all, this was like a really good episode. I mean, the one thing we haven't spoken about is the music. Ludwig van Göransson, he's back to do the tracks. So do you think he did a good job of trying to kind of separate the music tone from what we've heard of what he does with The Mandalorian?
I'll be honest, I was underwhelmed. It didn't light me up at all.
Interesting.
Whereas when Mandalorian came out, straight away I was like, hairs on the back of the neck. Yeah. That is something else. Whereas this didn't land for me at all. It felt too evocative of other things. Did not feel like Star Wars one iota. Doesn't scream Boba Fett to me in any way. But to be fair, I don't know what would.
No, that's
I really
the
don't
question.
Know. Other than that low bassoon music you hear in Empire that I associate with Fett, you know which bit I mean, whenever Fett turns up, that's the only music I really associate with Fett as a character anyway, and that wouldn't work as a main theme. So I know it will grow on me because I'm predisposed to want to like it. I'm not here hating on it because I don't want to like it. Yeah. I want to like it. I want it on my playlist. I want to be listening to it when I'm writing stuff. So I've seen the episode 3 times, so I've heard the music very briefly.
Yeah.
But didn't light me up, didn't scream classic to me. Like Mandalorian straight away, I was like, that is just so catchy, so percussive, just had a vibe to it, the brass coming in. It's in my head now. The Fett theme's not even remotely in my head. It's not locked in at all. What about yourself?
When I watched it today, I did pay a specific attention to the music. And I think, comparing it to The Mandalorian's quite triumphant. Like major key and very kind of like da 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 da, you know, we're off and we're going to have an adventure, and it's not meant to be that kind of tone as such. I mean, because it kind of ends on a minor note, and it almost doesn't necessarily resolve itself as a full musical riff as such. It feels slightly unfinished, and I think part of that is down to the fact that all through that flashback when he's being dragged around, it kind of reminded me of like the earlier scenes in the original Conan Barbarian when he's kind of pushing the wheel of pain and stuff like that, and it's all about torment and it's all about you know, suffering. That's the kind of vibe I got. And then out of all the music in that episode, the end credit music was the music that I was like, this is actually pretty cool. There's a lot more vocalization, kind of tribalness in terms of like, you know, throat singing and kind of like all that kind of stuff that we get in this whole episode, which I quite liked. But that is the thing, and it's a bit like with a Han Solo theme from Solo. I don't know if it's just because it's new. Han Solo and Boba Fett, do they necessarily need their own themes per se? You know, and maybe a motif will kind of come out and develop through the course of the next kind of 7 or so episodes. But it was catchy enough for me to even be able to hum it right now. And then maybe the music's going to develop and grow into something over the course of a season.
This is Steve Bloom, voice of Zebralios, and you're listening to Fanthatrax Karavast. May the force be with you.
We're in 2 time periods with this first episode.
Yep.
Obviously, we're in the past, nestled into Return of the Jedi, and then right after season 2 of The Mandalorian. So we're sort of half a decade between the two stories. Right now, what would you say the A story is, and what would you say the B story is? Which one, to you, was the primary story, or would you say it's fairly even?
I think at the moment, partly because you started with it, the backstory has slightly more emphasis than the main story. I think the main story is going to take over at some point, because I think whatever happens in his past is going to develop to a point. Be interested to see if they start to kind of draw parallels between what's happening in the past with what's happening in the present, and tying it together that way. I mean, the whole kind of use of flashbacks and like the mechanism for actually getting into the flashbacks, I felt was a little bit samey. You know, with like the Mandalorian, you'd only really have a flashback when he went and saw the armorer, when she hit the hammer on the anvil. That was the transition point, and you'd get kind of a bit of a flashback. It feels like at the moment the flashbacks are, you know, derived around his dreams and the Bacta tank. That was the one thing that, as much as I really like to see all these flashbacks and be really heavily stylized and with like really heavy bleach bypass and grain to kind of like transition in, I don't know if there was a better way of doing it. And a part of me actually thinks, I wonder if this would have been almost better to have like the first episode purely full flashback, literally from the time that he's in the Sarlacc pit right the way through to the point when he meets that Ray Harryhausen monster on the sands, or even further beyond that. Because the story that, you know, we're kind of getting at the moment in the present is going to be a builder, I think. He's forging kind of relationships with all these different people, the mayor from Mos Espa, Gwala Frit, plus obviously Fennec. And I think those will come into play a lot more as we kind of progress through the season. But at the moment, for me, obviously, I'm so much more curious to see what happens with him and the Tuscans and the tribe and stuff like that. So that's where I'm headed. How about yourself?
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think it's a useful tool to be able to flip between the two. But by the same token, sometimes it can be a bit disruptive. And the Bacta tank was a great way to transition between the two. Quite visual and, you know, logical way of doing that. But by the same token, I'm very curious as to why in this current era, which I, as I say, is like 5 years after Jedi, so 5 years after the Sarlacc, he's still, when he's knocked around or not able to keep up or gets somebody gets the better of him, it's fair enough seeing him get beaten up by kids, getting whacked out by Jawas, the female Tusken proper hands him his ass in that sequence. He's really weak, you know, he's been dragged along behind a bantha, he's tied up to a tree post. I don't know whether there are any trees on Tatooine, but hey ho, you understand he's weakened in those sequences. Now I'm very curious as to see why he still requires the Bacta, because clearly things are happening to him.
I mean, you do raise a good point, because that was the one thing that stood out to me from that fight, was the fact that the first reaction was maybe it's an over-reliance on Bacta, because he was like, you know, take me to the Bacta tank. So, I mean, the fight itself, I will just place my thoughts on it. I wasn't massively blown away by it. Now, obviously, Tem is like, what, 61? And actually, to be fair to him, Ming-Na Wen is like 58. Yeah. Neither of them are particularly young in the real world. The fight itself, I don't know if it's just down to how it was choreographed and or edited and shot, but none of it, even the parkour stuff, it all just felt a little bit flat for me. The main part of the present day storyline, but it probably wasn't actually that big a deal in the grand scheme of things, beyond the fact that maybe, like you say, it's going to set up something for subsequent episodes. But I'm hoping anyway that the action and the set pieces will ramp up for the next few episodes. Well, that's really all we have time for this week. So Mark, can you tell the good listeners how they can get in touch if they have like a question, comment, or kind of like thoughts and theories about where the Book of Boba Fett is going to go to in the coming weeks?
Absolutely. And if you do have any questions and thoughts, send them in, because we will chew over anything and everything. Questions, comments, good or bad, always welcome. If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free PantherTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com. We will read them out. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks. And be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a five-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the PantherTracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember, tune in to our Panther Tracks news show, Good Morning Tatooine, live, not all, but most Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on Facebook and YouTube. That show will be back very soon. And as for this one, I'm done.
Awesome. Thank you for that, my friend. Let's look forward to next week's episode. Until then, look after yourself and take care. And everybody else, of course, thank you very much for listening. Stay safe, wear those masks, and if you haven't got boosted, get boosted. And until next week, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on FanthaTracks Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.